Are you looking for killer graphics, a great logo, a promotional video, or even the coolest animations? Well, look no further than Kendall Peters Designs. Affordable work with that creative flair that you always need in your designer. Let Kendall Peters Designs make your product or service sparkle. Go to www.kendallpeters.com. That's KendallPeters.com. KendallPeters.com. She'll make your business look fantastic.
Show with Misery Loves Company, and since Chris and I are two miserable fucks, we enjoy the company of having some in-studio guests, as in-studios are going to get, and we want to welcome a couple of members of that. What's that band from New Orleans? What the fuck is the name of that band?
Is it Axe Grinder?
Louisiana LaRue.
Yeah, LaRue.
Well, we want to welcome Wayne Stokely, the most important member of the band.
Right.
And another guy, what was his name, Steve Blaze? Something like that. Well, welcome back to the Classic Metal Show, guys.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you back on. It's Steve. It's been a long time. We always were happy to have you on. You've always been a good guest, good talker, good input. And you're a guy who is like Chris and I. You just don't give a fuck.
About certain things, I don't. Hope you guys, it's good to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Well, Steve, I know you're a big fan of the show. You've been catching up with all the episodes lately?
I actually had we just ran through them. Brent, our singer, and I were just in the room watching through some of the most recent ones recently. But you guys, what is this episode number, like 10,000? Like that?
Yeah, pretty much at this point. We've done a million episodes.
Well, we appreciate you guys keeping the flag flying high, man.
Absolutely. So to what do we owe the honor of having you on the show? I guess now that this, this worldwide bogus pandemic has finally let up, you guys have decided to get out there, blow the dust off, and go out there and entertain the fans again?
Well, actually, the whole year going through this, Brent and I were doing Man Cave shows. We did one streaming show. If it had mandates, we'd have been out there everywhere and anywhere we could. But we did take the year to kind of regroup. We have Brent Graham as our brand new vocalist. Wayne Stokely, our infamous friend here, is now our new revisions to the band. We've been in the studio working on records. So by no means did we sit idle. We were busy the whole year. Just kind of regrouping and re-solidifying ourselves. So we didn't, we took advantage of the time down. Now, as of last week, we are back out. We've got dates between now and February. We've done two shows already, and we're hitting the road and getting this record done so that we can continue to do what we really miss doing.
Well, when you regroup, did you wear a mask and did you social distance?
Well, here's a story, but back in December of 19, I got bronchitis really bad, right? I spent a month trying to fight that up until my family and I went to Disney at the end of December and got so sick at Disney that the head of the family, I spent New Year's Eve 2019 in the emergency room. Got home. Disney went back to the emergency room and they told me I had the swine flu, which right when COVID was starting, doctor informed me a few months later that they all think that I was one of the first ones to get COVID from Disney. So I think I had that mess. It took me 3.5 months to beat that because I had bronchitis underneath it. And it was a real, very difficult time for me. But I think I had that way before then. So, I did what I needed to do. I masked up when I needed to be. But it was ridiculous. I didn't. I wasn't going to wear a mask driving in my car by myself. So, you know, just did, you know, what needed to be done to keep those people around me safe and all that stuff. That is a whole nother topic for discussion that would take us about 6 days to go through. So, but, you know, we took advantage of the time down. I honestly, so many people got, you know, 20 pounds heavier and whatnot. I decided to start the diet the day of COVID and lost 30 pounds. I wasn't going to sit around and become a casualty just because of that. So,
right. No doubt, man. Well, and it's great that you guys are getting it back together too. I have to imagine, you know, these first shows just getting back out there, not you guys necessarily, but the crowds have to be a little bit weird because everybody's been kind of lured into almost fear of people, you know, where you have to convince them, hey, you're not going to die when you're around people again. So talk a little bit about that. You guys have played a couple of shows, you know, at this point. How have the crowds been, and has it been somewhat of a changed reaction?
What do you think, Wayne?
Well, I played with my mask on. I just took it off for the first time right now.
Is that what that is?
No. you know, it seemed fairly normal, to be honest with you, especially in New Orleans. It was jam-packed. Everybody was excited. You know, it seemed pretty normal to me. Don, what do you think, Steve?
I felt the same way. Honestly, I think people were so tired of the ridiculosity of what was going on. Now, I'm going to be the first one to say, I think there was some good out of it. But the fact of the matter is that there was so much politics involved, so much untrust, that it made people not know when and where, what they should, how they should do it, because we didn't really have anyone that you could trust to tell the honest to God, we're finding that out more and more every day. So we had to do what was best and what was safest. But a lot of people went way beyond what should have been done. And a lot of people were sensible about it. You know, we're suffering as a country because of a lot of bad decisions. But I think now, I mean, honestly, I used hand gel for the last 30 years. So it's not like all of a sudden some new epiphany that, oh my God, I should be clean. We should always be aware of, you know, hygiene, et cetera, and not sneezing on, you know, the produce and Walmart and whatever. But right. You know, that's something that we should always be doing anyway. But as far as like the reaction to people, I think that everybody is I didn't see any difference, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, we still shook hands. We still gave people hugs. Nobody got weird and said, hey, 6 feet away or anything like that. Everybody just seemed back to normal. I think there's kind of a new reset of just be smart, take better care of yourself, and be cognizant of those around you.
Sure, no question, man. And you know, obviously for a band like Lillian Axe, taking a year off, that just doesn't seem like it could happen. I mean, it's part of the DNA of the band, and the band's not, you know, you're not Metallica where you could take a year off and you don't die. You know, how did you get through, you know, a year of basically, you know, not touring and not playing shows and not gigging?
Well, one thing that we did was we didn't disappear. I mean, with me going on Facebook every day and saying hi to everybody and giving them some upbeat. I mean, I like to talk to people. I like to give people positivity. Okay.
Right.
Look, I'll complain and whine as much as the person next to me, but I'm a solutions person. I want to move forward. I'll whine about something, but I'm going to have a solution or a positive thought about it every day. And I know a lot of people look to us to just, you know, they like our music. Our music means something more to them. The song about the girl they used to go out with. Our music is much deeper than that. And a lot of people like to hear, you know, positivity. So that's what I taught. So I stayed in contact. Brent and I did, we called them the Man Cave shows, where we played live once a week acoustically for everybody. I have a podcast called Love and War Show. We were doing every week just to give everybody, let everybody know what was going on with the band. We're working on the new record. You know, it's been several years since our last studio record. And I'm bombarded with, we need more music. We're not a band that relies on, you know, we're going to go out and play all the stuff that people know from our past records. That's not what I'm about. That's not what the band's about. It's about continuing to create until my very last breath, I'll be writing, preparing, doing other records. I think that connection, you know, people can always put your music on. That's the great thing about it. Even if we're not out there playing live, thanks to, you know, there's some elements of the internet that are great, like the fact that YouTube, you can go and watch past performances, the fact that they can stay in touch. They can stay in touch email and through Facebook and through the website, and we respond back to them. And keeping that communication going between us and our fans and friends, it lessens the blow of us not being out there, because they still connect with us at a certain level.
Well, Steve, you talked about, you know, making a new record, and, you know, that means something different in this day and age. And we often talk to veteran artists, you know, you know, obviously you've been around for decades now as a musician and performer, and, you know, the Lillian Axe name has been out there for quite a long time. So what does it mean to you today to make a record? I mean, where do you see a record being? I'm not going to use the word profitable, because everybody today says, yeah, there's no music money in music anymore. Aside from the creative outlet, what does it mean to you to make a record?
First of all, honestly, I know it sounds cliche, but I didn't get into this business to become a multimillionaire. Those of you who do, very few of you get the breaks. Doesn't mean you don't have the talent to do it. If you do, then you had things go in a certain direction that allowed you to do that. But there are thousands of talented people that have never become financially successful in this business. And if that's what you're looking for, that's fine, but be prepared. We create music. I created music when I was a little kid because I love to do it, because it's a way for me to express all those things that I want to share with people. And making a record, to me, whether or not the format is digital, 8-track or album or vinyl or CD or whatever it is, it's all the same to me. It's a novel. It's a work. It's like a movie. It's a creative conglomeration of ideas that are working together. That's why you won't see us just putting single out, single, 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 and then we bunch them together and make a record. Every record from the very beginning now, whether it's conceptual or not, still has a with the other songs that make it a complete piece. It's a complete work. This album, the new one's called From Womb to Tomb, and it is the most conceptual record that we've ever done. But even the past, Love and Psycho, they all work together to make one giant piece. So if you get one piece, it's like reading one chapter of a book and not reading the other ones. So that's still very important. When you listen to a record, you know, hopefully you have the time to listen from first song all the way through, because at the end of it, it makes sense. It's like I said, it's like writing a novel. Each chapter is its own unique piece, and it means something completely different when you read them in order. And hearing one song at a time might be great. Oh, there's a great chapter, great scene in a movie, but to get the full gist of it and the full emotional meaning of it, I think you have to hear the whole piece. So we've stuck to our guns on that. I'm not going to be, you know, here, our new single for this year is this, and one track at a time. That's not what we're about. That's not ever going to be what we're about.
Sure.
You got great one,
Chris? I wanted to ask Wayne, you know, Wayne, you've obviously been in both your own bands as well as stepping into several different bands over the years. And, you know, most people that are not musicians won't know this, but that's a difficult situation to do, because, you know, especially when you have your own music, you certainly have a style that you get used to. And then to step in and have to play somebody else's style is a difficult adjustment. You know, so talk a little bit about the adjustment that you had to go through, you know, jumping in now into Lillian Axe.
Luckily for me, there really was no big adjustment, because I've always been a fan of the band, you know, okay, since 10 years old. You know, obviously they were 12 at that time, but regardless. But no, I mean, I played, you know, rock and roll, punk, metal, power metal through the years. So it wasn't that difficult to me, because I played, you know, a million different styles. So it was pretty comfortable. But If you've just stuck to one style for 10 or 20 years, then yeah, it could be a little bit difficult, but you know, it was as easy a transition as, you know, I could hope for jumping into this. I mean, I already knew all the songs, so
okay. That helped. Yeah. I'm just always curious because, you know, I obviously keep up with you on Facebook and I see you in, especially with the tribute bands, you play in a lot of bands that have nothing to do with this style of rock and metal. You know, and
right,
you do
they
it
have
well.
Everything to do with money, though. Yeah, those are the easy. I mean, those bands are a piece. That's a cakewalk, you know.
Right.
So there's nothing more. There's nothing much to that, you know. I mean, you still have to play the material right, but that's fairly easy. Yeah.
Sure. Definitely. And for you, Steve, I mean, you're no stranger to switching guys out. I almost think that's part of your creative process is to create with new people to keep it fresh. So talk about it this time. You know, you obviously bring Wayne in and you've got a new singer as well, you know, which gives Lily and Axe, you know, a new coat of paint, so to speak, as you started writing new music.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I started the band in 83. It's scary to think about 38 years of doing this.
Yeah.
And it's like this. Okay. Take any band, not even a band. Let's just take a corporation. Life changes. People change. Okay. Especially in today's climate, people are emotionally stimulated a lot more than they ever have been. So they change life directives. They change their goals. And a lot of times, this is a very difficult business to be in. If you don't really have it in your DNA and in your heart to do it, sometimes as you get older, it's just some people just don't feel like it's, I don't want to tour anymore. I'm not really into doing this. I'm not really, I just want to be in my cover band and stay home. And that's the way it has really been for the most part. We've never had any member changes in the past 40 years. Getting on 40 years, that were ugly or rude. Honestly, we never had a fight. It was just people were like, I'm tired of, you know, don't want to travel. People had families, new families, kids that didn't want to travel. And for whatever reason, they wanted to just stay close to home. That was usually the situation. And that's fine with me. I, you know, when we got inducted into the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame 10 years ago, every single person that had ever been in a band was a part of that. It's one family. Lillian Axe is not about me, not about the first members in the organization. It's about anybody that's ever been a part of the band. We've had a few changes over the years, but I mean, you look at anybody from LA Guns to
Great White, yeah.
Great White, Night Ranger,
yeah, all of them.
Name them all. They all have. The only I don't even know any bands out of the original three members and never had a change at all. It's right. Part of life. And I always welcome that. The great part about it is, you know, like with Wayne, for example, Wayne's always been a part of Lillian X family, but he was in there as a fan. He was listening. Same thing with our last vocalist, Brian Jones. I have pictures of me meeting him when he was about 8 years old. Okay. So, I mean, those types of things, they're always a part of it. So I don't look at it as, you know, you'll see some bands that, you know, they have bad feelings about things and, you know, and there's a bad blood. That's not that, you know, whether somebody says, oh, I quit, just, you know, Steve was too harsh. You don't hear that. You know, right. It's just, we wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. I wanted to have my own band. I wanted to do this. I didn't want to tour. I didn't want to travel. And that's fine because at the end of the day, it's all about the songs. And we've got a long history of putting out records and I have, hopefully I have another 10, 15 albums to put before I move on. So,
well, he told me the other night we came off stage in Memphis and he said he's got 30 years left. So
absolutely.
That's what we're doing for the next 30 years, maybe more. to a kind of attest to that last comment, you know, I've been in bands like this where the original member takes 95% and the other three guys split the other five. And this is not like that in any way, shape or form.
Okay.
To Steve's credit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's how this show works. I take 95% and Chris works for peanuts.
That's right.
Boy, he is a glutton for punishment. That's for sure.
Well, Steve, do you are you still in contact with Ron Taylor?
You know, I I haven't talked to Ron in a long time. I know that he's reached out to Brent, our new singer, and emailed him some nice compliments and whatnot. No, I haven't talked to him in a long time. When I have seen him years ago, it was just like, you know, hey, man, how you doing? It's good to see you. And that it's, you know, it's not anything bad. It's not anything, no problems. It's just he's doing his own thing. And,
sure.
You know, I mean, you know, even back in the day when he was in the band, Ron, you know, it's not he stays to himself. He does his thing. And that's what he's all about. I mean, he's a, you know, an amazingly great talent, great singer. Love him to death. He, no issues. He just didn't want to do it. He wanted to go and stay closer to home and do his own thing, which he's been doing, obviously. So just don't, you know, I talked to some of the guys that from the past or whatnot, but some of them come out to shows. But it's just that, you know, people move on. If they needed anything, if I could help them with anything, I'd be the first in line to help them. But, you know, it's just fortunately, there's no drama. There's no soap opera that we can talk about because it's never been anything with any other members other than, hey, look, man, I'm burnt out. I want to do this. I'd rather stay close to home. I want to do my own thing or whatever. It's never been anything ugly. So,
always positive. Well, since we're talking about your touring, back in the 90s, I used to drive a truck and I often found myself going through Columbus, Ohio, and that seemed to have been a very popular stomping ground for Lillian Axe. It seemed like whenever I listened to when commercial radio used to actually play music, I would hear the Blitz in Columbus, Ohio, always pumping Lillian Axe shows all the time. You guys played in Columbus. It seemed like you guys played in Columbus quite a bit. It seemed like coming to, I can't remember what the venue.
Al Rosa Villa?
It could have been Al Rosa Villa, and there was another place there, but it was always Lillian Axe, you know. And they had a girl, a hot DJ chick. I think her name was Ronnie Hunter. And she would always play Lillian Axe all the time. And you know, she was a big fan, I'm pretty sure, because she played your stuff all the time. Every time I went through Columbus and listened to the Blitz, when I listened to commercial radio, they would always play your stuff. And I thought, man, this band is hot here in this area. So can you tell us anything about your time in Columbus? Was that a hot spot for you guys or not?
Well, I know we played Cincinnati, we played Dayton, we played Columbus. I think it was, I mean, it wasn't like one of the places that we frequented more than anywhere else, but it was a good stop. We used to like to go up through the Midwest and go into Illinois and Indiana and Michigan and a little bit into Minnesota. And so we'd always come right through there. But that part of the country was just such a good, solid, you know, when they call it, what do they call it? Like the Midwest, the breadbasket of the United States or whatever. It was a lot of just really like not your glitzy, you know, Hollywood type. Oh,
it was blue collar rock.
It was very much so. And people were like dedicated. I mean, I still have people, especially like in Chicago, that will talk to me all about the Thirsty Whale shows in Chicago. We used to play there all the time. I mean, I will tell you one thing that it's kind of, I don't know, catch 22 with this band, right? People that have been into Lillian Axe from the beginning, they call us a cult band or whatever you want to say. And not that I'm a leader of a cult, but we have a cult following. The people that get into Lillian Axe and get what we do, they are so dedicated. They are lifers. They stick with us. It hits a nerve it's amazing to me. You know, I would like that nerve to hit 100 million people. And with the right, I don't know, what do you want to say? Right mechanism, the right stroke of lightning, the right path.
Love.
A lot of people could find out about it. Because I still hear people now that, you know, I mean, people, I've never heard of Lillian Axe before. And then I do. And now you're my favorite band. It's like, we've been around so long. What do you have to do to get to people now? And you start thinking about all the years of radio and traveling and playing gigs, and we just seems like, my gosh, we've only touched a small fraction of the people. If you don't like the band, you have all the, you know, that's great. But it bothers me that so many people have not had a chance to experience our music. We've got a lot of music in a few from, you know, 13 releases. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. That's the only thing that I kind of regret is like we is not being able to reach so many people. You know what I'm saying? So we have this weird kind of, oh, you guys are, we're always lumped into the underrated bands. Us, King's X, Saigon Kick, the underrated three. That's all I've heard that. I'm like, if I hear another, you know, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said we're underrated, we would, you know, we wouldn't have the conversation. Exactly. So, but there's something kind of cool to that. There's something kind of unique and cool to know that you're like this weird ice cream flavor that nobody's ever had, but everybody that has eaten it loves it to death, you know? So, but
just stick around until there's no one left.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, one last thing there, Steve, before we let you go. And I've always been curious, and I don't know if I asked this question before, but I don't recall. How did you originally hook up with Robin Crosby early on to produce the self-titled release?
Well, we, like I said, I officially formed the band Halloween Night of 83. We spent the next 4 years everywhere. We, the band that, down in Louisiana that was kind of the, you know, the kings of the scene was Zebra. They started off, they played a lot of classic rock stuff. They were very Zeppelin oriented, great band. They were very popular. We came out, we started playing the metal stuff, the Priest, Scorpions, Sabbath, Aerosmith, Van Halen, all that kind of stuff. And we started throwing in originals. For 4 years, we beat down the path all through the South. We went to New York, went to the Midwest, came back. And we were, I mean, we would literally play a Wednesday night in Lafayette, Louisiana, and draw 500 people. We were killing it. The whole thing that was missing was a record deal. So we got asked to open up for Rat and Queensryche on 5 shows in the South as an unsigned band. Okay. So we did the shows, and after the second show, the security head of security for Rat came up to me and said, hey, Steve, I need to get your number from Marshall Burl, who was managing Rat at the time. And anybody that remembers that, Marshall Burl and Doc McGee were the two top managers because he had Rat and Crew at the time.
Right.
I think it was Motley Crue he was managing. But they were the two top managers everybody talked about. So I'm like, oh, man, I wonder if he's going to call me. He's either going to ask me to play guitar for Rat or talk to me about something else. So I get a call from him on a Monday morning after we had done the first 2 shows, and it was earlier in the morning, and he was in California, so he must have gotten up at 6 o'clock to call me because it was like 8 a.m. And I have to sleep, answer the phone, hello, hey Steve, this is Marshall Burl, I manage Rat. Look, man, would you like a record deal? And I was like, I woke up, and he proceeded to tell me that Robin Crosby really liked the band, and that he could get us a deal. He had a relationship with Irving Azoff at MCA, could get us a deal, and Robin wanted to produce our first album. From there, it was a whirlwind. We did shows. We had MCA Brass coming down. We had, long story short, that's how we got interested. Robin saw us opening up for them and wanted to produce our first album. So cool. He came down, flew in town, and spent about 3 or 4 days doing pre-production in Jackson, Mississippi, holed up in a little dump of a room down in the worst part of Jackson. And that was it. Then we flew out a few weeks later to Cherokee Studio in LA and did the first album.
Nice.
Very nice.
Well, good idea. Robin was a sweetheart. He was a great guy. I'll tell you a funny Robin story. Okay, here you go. He and I went to eat Mexican food, right? It was the last day of pre-production. And we ate Mexican food, and Robin was a self-proclaimed vegetarian. So that night, as soon as we finished the last song, and it was like, all right, guys, we're done. We're ready. Everything's, you know, all the arrangements worked out. Great practice. Everybody go home. We'll see you in, you know, see you in L.A. in 3 weeks or whatever. Everybody, he takes a fifth of Crown Royal because that's what Ron and those guys used to. That was their poison back in the day. He drank half that bottle straight down, right? Next thing you know, we're like, where's Robin? He's in the other room just throwing his guts up, right? Oh, I mean, I'm like, holy cow, is he okay? I go, Robin, you all right, dude? He goes, Yeah, man. I think, you know, I'm a vegetarian. I think they had a little bit of meat in my nachos. I was like, oh, 1.5 a bottle of Crown Royal you just ingested, right? So, but let me tell you something. He was a sweet guy, man. I miss him. He was different. It was like he wasn't meant for the rock business. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He was very humble. He used to always ask me, man, do you think I'm any good? You think I'm any good? I'm like, dude, what are you asking me that for? You're in like one of the biggest bands in the world. Of course you are. You're a great talent. And I said, he just got it. Just, it was just a different person. He wasn't the LA breed. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't like, you know, look at me, look at what I do. He was always kind of insecure in a strange way. But that was one of the beautiful things about him. He was like that. But he was very talented. We had a blast with him, and it's just a shame that he's not around anymore.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's so interesting when you say that. I don't think people, I mean, everybody always pointed to Warren, and you know, Warren is an amazing player all by himself.
Right.
But you know, it wasn't until Robin passed where you really found out how influential he was to Rat's sound, because Rat's entire sound changed.
Right.
You found out who wrote the songs.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Guys, that's one of the things that I always stress with people is it doesn't matter what band you are. It's about the songs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always going to be about the songs. You could have the greatest guitar player in the world, can't write a song. He's only going to be remembered for his guitar playing, not the songs. The song is what lives forever. Right. When you take a band and the songwriter leaves, the band more than likely is going to have some changes, especially when it's something that it's a predominantly singular writer. Robin had a lot to do with, according to what I was informed, and I believe, because you can just listen to the sounds after he left, he was a riff writer, you know? And, you know, and I, you know, just as a fan sitting back, I would say that their sound did alter when he was no longer with them, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
All right, guys. Well, Wayne, Steve, we appreciate you keeping, you know, Chris and I company tonight, because as we know, misery loves company. And, you know,
thank you for having us.
You are dealing with the two most miserable fucks on the internet right now.
The two people responsible for destroying the Brotherhood of Metal. As
we are.
The Brotherhood of Metal.
The Brotherhood of Metal.
Does that sound like so 90s cheesy cliche? Brotherhood of Metal. Except for those guys.
We're brothers. Brotherhood of Metal, come on.
Hey, thank you guys very much. Anything we can do, and as soon as the new record is ready, we'll get it in your hands, and hopefully you will like it.
Well, Steve, I need a new car.
That's Wayne. Wayne handles the transportation.
Oh, boy. You're in trouble, Neely.
Tell everybody where they can find out about Lily and Axe and where you're playing and all that good stuff.
Sure. First of all, the best place is obviously, and it sounds cliche again, but Facebook. It's Steve Blaze page and the Lily and Axe page. LilyandAxe.com as well. Our merchandise, we have a brand new deal with a company called Vision Merch. So it's visionmerch.com. You can stay in touch with us. Where else, Wayne? Wayne's Facebook page, Wayne Stokely.
Yeah.
Any other
There's guys? A bunch of Lillian fan groups, a bunch of stuff's in there. But just the Lillian page and Steve's page are always pretty up to date.
Yeah. And
we got dates coming up starting next week in Houston, 17th, Dallas on the 18th, Monroe, Louisiana, 19th. Jackson, Mississippi, and Destin, Florida next month, Atlanta in August. There's all kinds of dates.
Birmingham, at Newton, North Carolina. We're doing a show with Fast Pussycat and Enough's Enough in July. Jackson, Mississippi. We're moving around. We're going probably about 8 different states, which is good. We're happy to do that. We just did Memphis. And
hopefully we can get Illinois and then Cleveland and get you and Chris out of the house.
Absolutely.
Well, I know Neely will come. Getting Chris out of the house might be a whole different order.
Well, I see a pattern there, playing all the red states.
Is that what we're doing?
Is that what that is?
Yeah, you know, the states that are more free and, you know, they don't give a fuck and they believe
in you. Well, you can't play the states that are closed, can you?
Only if you're Bruce Springsteen tribute, right. And you can do it.
There you go.
Nice. All right, guys. Well, Steve, I think the last time we had you on the show, believe it or not, was with the release of Waters Rising.
Oh, wow.
That was a while. So I think what I'll do is I'll let you pick a tune from that album and take us out of the interview.
That sounds good. Well, I tell you what, just kind of a tongue-in-cheek reminder, let's play Quarantine off Waters Rising.
You were reading my mind. That's kind of why, that's kind of why I picked the album aside from that, but I did already have that queued up.
Very nice. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you.
All right. Well, go out and see Lily and Max if they're coming to a town near you. They're good guys and very entertaining, great music. So here it is. It's Lily and Max with Quarantine exclusively here
on your classic metal show. Thanks for checking out this episode of The Classic Metal Show. Get all of our episodes uncensored at www.theclassicmetalshow.com. Join us weekly from 9 p.m. till 3 a.m. Eastern at www.cmsradio.net. Participate in the live chat room at www.chatandkill.com. Once again, thank you for checking out The Classic Metal Show with Neely and Chris. Hail and kill, fuck you, pal, and hand job.